So let's continue the conversation on the 2016 ballot questions now with Dakota political junkies Seth Tupper and Denise Ross. They join us from the SDPB studios in Rapid City. Seth and Denise, thanks for coming in.
Hi, Kara.
Thanks for having me.
So let's start, Seth. Let's talk about all the money that came in to the state of South Dakota on these ballot initiatives.
Yeah, and I wrote a story on that for our weekend paper. There was about at that point there was about $11.1 million that had been contributed to the 10 ballot measures in total, and about $9.4 million of that came from out of state. And one thing a lot of people don't realize is there's no limit on what you can spend on a ballot question committee. It's unlimited spending, so that really attracted a lot of money this time around. And in some ways, it was successful for some people, and in others, it wasn't.
Because South Dakota is a testing ground for some of these issues.
Well, I think so. Obviously, we have our low population gives us a low signature threshold to get things on the ballot. It was only the top threshold this year was somewhere around 27,000 signatures. I compared that to California, where you need 500,000 signatures to get something on the ballot. So, and then we, you know, the media advertising here is cheaper, so it is very attractive for people from out of state. Marcy's Law was a good example of that. He wants, there's a man in California who wants to spread that law across the country, and South Dakota is a good cost-effective place to start.
And Denise, your reaction to the ballot initiatives, did people really do their homework and know what they were voting on?
You know, they did, and I am thinking back to the big Senate elections we had in 2002, 2004, and you had the top-level political operatives in the state, not always with the highest opinion of the middle part of the country, come out here, and after going through the election process, tell me that South Dakota has some of the most sophisticated voters who understand what they're voting on as any they've ever seen, and I think you see that play out here in these ballot measures, and I had... and Seth had a similar experience. We were talking about this. Family members coming to us wanting an explanation of what are these ballot measures? What do they do? Have their sample ballot, run down the list. And the weekend before the election, my mother had brought her sample ballot and said, I need you to explain a few of these to me. And I was immediately surrounded by a small crowd of other family members who got out their pens and papers. And, you know, they wanted to know what they were voting on. And as you saw the election results come in last night, I think it was clear people did know what they were voting on. There was not any uniformity to these. I think for one thing, the payday loan measures, you had one that was a decoy and one that was a real reform. I think it's clear that they understood which was which. And I think that just goes back to what I heard back, you know, over 10 years ago now, that we have sophisticated voters in this state who understand what they're voting on. They care about what they're voting on. And whatever you think about the rest of the election results last night, I think we can all take heart in the fact that we do have civically engaged voters in this state. And I think that's a wonderful thing.
Well, you know, we hear criticism sometimes about having so many ballot initiatives, so many referred laws, so many constitutional amendments, but that is part of what makes South Dakota, South Dakota, and voters pay attention to that.
We were the first in the country to have the initiated measure and the referendum, so I'm proud of that as a South Dakotan.
Do you anticipate talk of having it go away?
I wouldn't think
people
so.
Do
I
complain.
Mean, there's a little
no?
bit... Pardon me?
No, go ahead. I'm sorry.
There's a little bit of grumbling about the number of ballot measures and comparing us to California, where they also tend to have a high number of ballot measures. The only thing that I would say we could use is a little bit more information, but I think but at the same time, obviously the voters went out and found the information they needed and voted accordingly. And so, you know, I don't think that could happen. I would be shocked.
And is this a talk a little bit about the overall turnout and the people who voted and if that had an impact at all, do you think, on these ballot initiatives?
Well, the turnout was huge statewide. I think I saw it was 70%. So I think it dovetails with what Denise said, that there was a lot of people voted. They were well informed, and I think the influence on of turnout on the ballot issues was good, because I think you had a very full participation by a lot of well-informed people, and the mixed You know, I think as you said in your earlier segment, there was a lot of talk of let's vote no on everything. Clearly, that didn't happen. That didn't carry the day. People, you know, studied each issue individually, and the results reflect that. So I think the turnout was, you know, for South Dakota as a whole was good for the ballot issues because it was, you know, I think they all got a fair airing and fair consideration.
You know, I didn't do the math, but 9,000 people did not cast a 9,000 people who voted in South Dakota did not cast a vote for a presidential candidate, and typically, you know, it's they don't vote for the ballot initiatives, and I think it flipped this time that people came out to vote ballot initiatives. Denise, what do you think?
Well, I think I've talked to a few of those people. I mean, I think I would, based on my conversations with certain voters, I'm surprised that the number is that low. I expected actually, well, I expected a different outcome, as a lot of people did at the presidential level. But I also, part of my calculus in that was thinking that a lot of Republicans would leave that blank. I spoke to a handful of them, and again, that's not a very large sample size, but people who just weren't able to get to that point where they said they could vote for Donald Trump. Maybe they ultimately got there. I thought that was going to be a big factor in a Trump defeat. Obviously, that did not occur.
You know, Seth, as we're talking about how much money came in, one of the comments that Steve Hildebrandt made to Keely Bultina this morning was that South Dakotans should rule South Dakota. Do you think that there's going to be any backlash at all for the amount of outside money that came in?
Well, I don't think so, because I don't think people are very well aware of it. And that was one of the reasons mm-hmm. I did the story is I think there's probably a popular assumption that there are some limits on the amount you can spend on a ballot issue, when in fact there are none. And I think there's a popular assumption among people that if something was petitioned to the ballot, that means it automatically means it's kind of a grassroots movement that people came together and collected signatures, when in fact, if you can live anywhere in the country and if you have enough money, you can pay a company to gather your signatures for you in South Dakota and just essentially pay your way onto the ballot. There's not much of an avenue for reform there because it's based on U.S. Supreme Court decisions is the reason why you can't limit contributions to a ballot question committee. So while people may, you know, bemoan the fact that there's all this out-of-state money and influence at this point, there's not a whole lot you can do about it. You could raise the signature thresholds and try that, but in a state with as few people as we have, I don't see that that's going to make a large impact or be much of a discouraging factor to people who want to put things on the ballot.
You know, by the same token, I look at these two referred laws, which are tricky to interpret, but essentially they're both a rebuke against the state legislature, because what they did was take two laws that the legislature passed, and as far as I know, South Dakotans went out and gathered these signatures and put these back on the ballot, and the voters, by overwhelming margins, overturned what the legislature had done. And so I think, you know, maybe you don't like out-of-state money coming in and out-of-state groups coming in, but by the same token, I think you'd definitely not want to take away the ability to refer some of these laws that maybe you don't like coming out of Pierre. And we've had more than our share. It seems to be a common theme every election, these last few elections.
To undo what the state legislature has done.
Right, one on the minimum wage for teenagers. Yeah. Or those under age 18, the voters said, no, we told you we wanted a minimum wage at a certain level, and we meant it. And then the other one was a law that would have made it much harder for independent candidates to get on the state ballot, and the voters rejected that pretty overwhelmingly.
So what does life as we know it look like in South Dakota with the changes that came through on these ballot measures?
Well, you know... It would have been a lot different had the nonpartisan election issue passed. It did not pass. Mm-hmm. Had the redistricting ballot measure passed, that did not pass. But we do have this basket of reforms, campaign finance law reforms, lobbying law reforms, public financing of campaigns. All of these things, I think we'll have to watch play out, an ethics commission. We'll have to watch this all play out and see how it affects our politics. I think that's going to be... you know, 5 years down the road, we may be able to assess how that's really impacting things. Certainly the payday loan industry, they say they're going to fold up and go away. I think we'll have to watch and see if that really does happen. And obviously teenagers will be getting paid the same minimum wage as adults.
Seth, anything to add?
Yeah, I'm most interested in initiated Measure 22. That's a 34-page measure. I think it'd be really interesting to watch the legislature in January. Will they go in and try to pick apart that measure and repeal parts of it? And will we be voting on that in the same way that we're voting on the minimum wage referred law this year? Because it's another kind of maybe misconception that people have about ballot issues, is that once it's passed by the people, it's a done deal. But in fact, the legislature on an initiated measure can go right back in and change it as they wish. They don't often do that, but as we saw with the minimum wage, they do sometimes.
You know, there's one more thing, Kara, with the Amendment R to the Constitution. It will change the way the tech schools are governed. Right. It will take those away from the K-12, not immediately, because now it's a two-step process. Now the legislature will come in and craft some kind of a law, and I think that will be probably a loud and long public discussion on what that governance system should look like for the tech schools. But essentially, we'll have the Board of Regents for the four-year colleges, we'll have our local school boards for the K-12, and then at some point in the future, we're going to have a separate governing board for those tech schools. That was the R for Jobs ads that you saw in a lot of TV commercials.
Okay, Seth Tupper and Denise Ross, I want to thank you for taking time and coming on the program today. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome.